And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio, and I'm here live with Peggy McColl. Peggy, you are just coming out with a brand new book coming out today. How awesome is that?
Perfect timing.
Perfect timing. And your book's called 21 Distinctions of Wealth. And you are a goal achievement coach. Is that correct?
Yes.
Very nice. So you do a lot of different things, and we're going to talk all about that because okay. We've got a great show lined up tonight. I'm very excited about it. And it's quite an honor to be able to interview you while while your book is coming out and it's being released everywhere. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. You must feel pretty good about that.
I feel very grateful. That's the word that immediately comes flooding to my mind.
So what I usually like to do is start with a journey, your journey. And I know it's part of a story, but a lot of times people can relate to that story because it's part of, it's just really part of how we connect with people. And so I like to start with the story, how you got where you are right now and what sort of started that journey.
Well, you know, my journey began, I'm 49 years of age, so began 49 years ago. We won't go through it all.
Okay, yeah, let's give the shortened version.
Yeah, that's right. Let's just get to the highlight points. When I was 19, I was working for this corporation, and they hired this gentleman by the name of Bob Proctor.
Oh.
And at the time, Bob was a motivational speaker, and he's obviously been doing this for many, many years now, and since the movie The Secret was released, he's become so much more world-renowned. And so Bob came in to do this motivational event for the company that I was working for. And prior to Bob arriving on the scene, I was a very negative person, very insecure, unhappy. You know, my life was basically miserable, and it was somebody else's fault. Certainly wasn't my own.
You were 19, right?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, say no more, right?
Yeah.
And so I had that BA, bad attitude. And so Bob Proctor came in, and he, you know, kicked off at this event, and I ended up in this big, gigantic ballroom sitting in the front row. And I still to this day don't even know how I ended up in the front row, because normally at that point anyways, I would have been in the back, and actually to be in the room would have been a big surprise. But the fact that I was in the room and Bob was there and I was in the front row, and he said something that became this epiphany for me when he said the words, "You cannot escape from a prison unless you know you're in one." And so this prison that he was talking about was the prison of negativity. He was talking about how we tend to lock ourselves away and throw away the key, basically, and, you know, just pretend that, or not pretend, but live our own reality, that there's nothing we can do about it, that that's just the fate that we've been given in our life, and that if you'd like to have something different in your life, for you to experience that positive change, you must change. And so all of these things that he was saying, you know, quoting from Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, and reading from Dr. Maxwell Maltz, etc., this was all brand new material, brand new ideas and concepts, and it was just enough for me to realize in that moment that, you know what, my misery was self-created, and there was no one else to blame, and if I wanted to blame anyone, grab a mirror and look straight in, because that's the person that was responsible. So if I wanted to have some change, I needed to change. And he also talked about the discipline that's required, and I just chose that day that I would basically fix my life. And not that it was broken, really. You know, now I look back, it's not that it was broken, it was all perfect. But I chose that day that I would invest in myself, and so I have for 30 years. You know, as I mentioned, I'm 49 years of age. And so for 30 years, I have passionately studied personal development. But after several years of being involved in personal development, I realized that I was experiencing positive change, and I thought, you know what, I bet there's other people out there that are experiencing similar or perhaps even the same type of pain, because those negative emotions, they can be painful, physically painful. And I had also experienced some health issues as it related to my negativity, and so I thought, if I can fix my life, I can help other people fix theirs, because mm-hmm. there's sort of three levels of creation. There's the seeking of the knowledge, there's mm-hmm. the understanding, and then there's the application. But you really have to have the first two before you're going to get the third, right?
I think that's a big piece that maybe The Secret even misses, but yes.
Yeah, you know, I think The Secret does touch on it. It does. But, I mean, there's so many different ways we can go.
Yeah.
You know, so many different ways we can go from The Secret. I give the Secret a ton of credit. I think there's fabulous stuff in there. Even when people say, well, The Secret doesn't talk about, you know, the emotional level. Well, yeah, it does. But, mm-hmm. you know, I think what there is there's such a hunger in the world for more that it just opens up the doors for many other mm-hmm. speakers, teachers, enlightened beings to shed more light, like the mm-hmm. work that you do, Lori.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just really, it's helped pave the way for many of us, and I'll include myself in that equation, because I'm asked the question quite often, well, you know, how's your book different from The Secret? It's not different at all. It's definitely a complement to The Secret. It's an extension of The Secret. And mm-hmm. so I'm very grateful that The Secret was created, and very grateful for all the teachers in The Secret. 5 minutes before you and I got on the phone, Marcy Shymoff called me. We've become friends. And,
nice. And
a lot of the people that are in that movie are now friends of mine.
Including Bob Proctor?
Yes, absolutely.
Who started all this?
Yes, wow. That's right. Yes, yes, yes. Bob has become a very cherished friend of mine, and which I'm very grateful for. And early in the years of going to see Bob Proctor, and we're talking, you know, close to 30 years ago now, I met his son, Brian, and Brian and I have become good friends, too, and we're good friends to this day. So it's been a wonderful journey. My journey has really been in the whole self-help space extensively. My career was in high tech, but my personal passion was in self-development, and I incorporated my business, Dynamic Destinies, in 1994. But I started my business part-time while I was still working in high tech before I got into it full-time.
Right. And were you, like, is that the motivation behind it? Like that high tech, that type of energy, is that how you've kind of combined it to make it the success that you have now?
Well, that's a great question. I would say that the high tech for me has been a wonderful blessing, because it makes me realize how technology can help us deliver these messages in a, you know, more advanced way. For example, just in the last week, I've been in a studio and I've had, you know, a production company create some videos. And you know, as I'm creating the videos, and I did one specific to talk about techniques that could be placed on my site and on YouTube, et cetera, and which we're now, you know, ready to do. And, you know, as I was watching it in the studio and looking at the video, I'm thinking to myself, it's so wonderful that we have the Internet today to be able to reach people no matter where they are in the world. And so I sort of blessed my technology experience for, you know, helping me understand what the potentiality is of technology to help with these messages, and, you know, for the relationships that I've created, and, of course, the skills that I learned, because my background, I was in sales. I was either started in sales support, then I was in sales, then I was in marketing, and ultimately the latest job that I had before I got into the business full-time was a vice president role in a dot-com company. And so what happened was I had incorporated my company, I was doing seminars, and then I went to work for a dot-com company as a vice president. And I did that, and then it became a dot-bomb, and then I went back into my business. So I was in my business, left my business, went back to my business. But while I was working in the dot-com company, I was a vice president of corporate development. I created a goal system for an organization that was growing at a rapid rate, so that all the employees could understand what their objectives are and how it lines up to the corporate goals and how they were going to be measured accordingly.
Yeah, because when I get your emails now, I mean, you have very much your newsletters are very much, you know, supporting other people, supporting, like you're creating this lovely network of people that help support everyone, so that everybody, because there's so many, like I guess what I was trying to bring in, the secret, and I liked how you said that, it opens doors. There are so many ways of getting there. We're just sort of, you know, tapping the top of the surface, and, you know, so it's nice when you have all of these, you know, support systems out there that are working together in a common type goal.
Oh, so true. And, you know, you think about it, Lori, like how any of us get anywhere is through people. And it's like I work with authors as well, as you know, to help them market their books on the Internet. It's become an expertise that I have. And it wasn't part of a plan. It was not in my business plan. It just sort of happened. And it still continues to happen because I think it's part of my own goal is to help make a positive contribution to the lives of millions of others. It doesn't have to be with just Peggy McCall's books or products or audio programs or whatever. It's with others as well, and so I do help and work with other authors. But if you think about it, anybody who did anything on this planet did it with the help of other people. And so, you know, we're all just working together. You know, it's called conspiring together. You know, we're supporting each other because we all believe in our work. And on, you know, with the whole launch of my book or any of my books, because 21 Distinctions of Wealth, this one's my fifth. And every single book that I've launched has been with the support and help of other people. And I just couldn't have done it without their help.
Which is lovely.
All of which I'm grateful for.
Yeah, very much. I can understand. So I'm going to go back to the journey because you talked about a couple experiences while you were in your book. And one of them was your experience after hearing Deepak.
Yes.
Can you explain how that sort of impacted you? Because we can understand the Bob Proctor and how that motivation, and I can see now the, you know, by the fact that you were in high tech, how that sort of, it's kind of given you a more open perspective in how you have created your business and how it moves you towards creating this type of very successful and, you know, this complementary way of working with others. So how has Deepak, how did that kind of bring you out?
Yes, wonderful, wonderful question. And I love Deepak's work. I mean, he's a brilliant illuminator. He's brought so much good to this world, and he continues to. He's an extremely passionate man about his work, and I find that he's constantly going and growing and giving and expanding. And there was one particular, lesson that Deepak taught me that took me by surprise at first. And then I didn't really understand it, and then I sought to understand it and understood it and made a big, big difference in my life. And that is, what he taught me is the willingness to give it all up leads to having it all.
Oh, yeah.
And so this whole concept, when I first heard it, the willingness to give it all up leads to having it all, when I first heard this, and at the time I was doing well, I had a beautiful home, and I read that or heard it and thought, I don't have any desire to give it all up. Mm-hmm. And that's not what he's saying. He's saying the willingness to give it all up.
It's the attachment that we have.
Attachment, exactly. He talks about unhealthy attachments and healthy detachments.
Mm.
And there's so much brilliance in that. So what he's saying is, if you have the willingness to give it all up, like, you know, since I first learned that, I mean, the home that I'm in now is 2.5 times the size. My net worth has expanded, I don't know, 20-fold. You know, like what I've achieved today versus where I was even then. Like, am I willing to give it all up? Yes, absolutely I'm willing to give it all up. Because two things. One, my stuff or my things don't make me who I am, number one. And two, if I created it in the past, I absolutely have the ability to recreate it and more in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so such a simple and brilliant understanding it. But as I said, I didn't first get it. I had to really seek to understand it. It was like I'm scratching my head going, what? I'm not giving it all up. And, you know, it's interesting is, you know, with the release of 21 Distinctions of Wealth, that is one of the distinctions. It's distinction number two, the willingness to give it all up leads to having it all. And I would say that it is probably the biggest question that I get asked is with regard to that particular distinction. What do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is because it's intriguing, and I think part of it is because people are probably having the same reaction as me. It's like, oh, I don't want to give it all up.
I just work really hard to get here.
That's it.
You know? Yeah.
That's it, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And we've seen examples of people that, you know, I think you go into this later about how, you know, there are fears around, you know, around losing it so that they become miserly or they, you know, they don't enjoy it. They don't take the time to appreciate it. And so then you know, then there's this negativity around it, which, you know, it has to block at some point them moving forward.
Sure. It's so true. You know, there are people that have a lot of money. You know, they have a lot of stuff, and yet they're so afraid of losing it, or they get caught up in the fear of what's going on in the economy, even though they're financially set for their lives. And so they're actually living their life in poverty, even though they have the riches, because of the emotional experiences that they're having.
Yeah.
And if they just realize that it doesn't have to be that way, you know, you can relax and become more freeing. You know, one of the things that I do, even to this day, is I continually study. And this morning I was over at the studio and driving back, and I'm listening to Catherine Ponder in my car. These are old CDs. And I say CDs because I managed to find her work on CDs, but they're from old material. And she was talking about, you know, in economic times, hard times. And I suspect she recorded this 30 or 40 years ago. But it's so funny that, you know, to hear her talking about economic hard times when right now we're in these, you know, so-called economic hard times. And she said that it's at this time when we need to do the spending. And it's at this time when most people close up their wallets, right? And that's what's going on is, yeah, you know, we are faced with different financial requirements, like gas prices going up, which is rippling into other areas, like grocery prices going up. And I'm not saying we'll just spend as if there's, you know, no end. That's not it at all. What I'm saying is that we can still experience and feel abundance. And it doesn't have to be with the almighty dollar. I mean, yes, we can, you know, I think it's important to still, you know, have the money out there circulating in the universe. I mean, heck, I certainly circulate lots of it. But also to, you know, look at, there are other ways of getting, you know, exchanging value for value, services for services. And there's a story of this antiques dealer who had this record, and he needed some dental work, which was expensive. And then a dentist ended up coming in and saying, you know, I'd really love to have that particular record, and would you be willing to take some dental work in exchange for it? And he said, yes, you know, I'd really like that. So, you know, there were no dollars exchanged, but there was value for value.
Exactly.
And, you know, I remember this time, and I write about this as well, where my son was into skateboarding, and he was at the skateboard park, and he'd go into the garbage, and he'd pick out the old skateboards. I'm like, what are you doing? It's a garbage picker, you know? Like, what am I raising here? And he said, no, Mom. He said that the bearings and the wheels of the treks or whatever, whatever they're called, are still good. He said, I can, you know, clean these up and polish them off, and I can sell them. You know, somebody may not be able to afford to buy a brand-new skateboard, but they might want a good used one. Look at these. These are still in good shape. I'm going to sell them. And he would do that. And he'd be there, and people would break their board or whatever and, you know, want to throw it out. And he'll say, I'll give you $5 for it. And they're like, $5? Okay, I'll take it. And then he'd take it apart and sell the parts for $10. And so, I mean, he was just amazing me. And so, here, you know, there's another example. He had nothing, you know, $5. But he did go into the garbage and pull some out that didn't cost him anything and made money from it. And that's where he got his $5 in the first place. And he would do the same. Like the home that we're in now, it backs onto a private golf course. And of course we get golf balls in our backyard. And I don't know how he knows this, because he's gone out golfing a few times, but he does know the difference between the different types of golf balls, and that a Pro V golf ball is more expensive than, you know, another no-name type of golf ball. He'll go out into our backyard. He'll pick up all the golf balls. He'll bring them into the laundry room, clean them all off. He gets these clear plastic egg cartons.
Oh, yeah.
And he packages them up, and he puts the Pro V's all together, and he'll put the Nikes together or the Titleist or whatever, you know, the ones that are in good shape versus the others. And then he brings one of our little wooden tables from the backyard and a chair, and he goes out onto the golf course. We have a gate that goes out of the golf course, and he sits there. And he sits there, and he has a few random extra balls, and he waits for the golfers to come by. And then he stands up, you know, as he sees them, and he holds out a ball, and he says, hey, I found this ball. Would you like it? So what he's doing is he's giving them something of value for nothing. So so they go, yeah, sure, you know, I'll take it. And, you know, what golfer wouldn't, right? So they take the ball, and he says, well, if you need more, I've got a dozen Pro Vs over here I could sell you for $20. Well, you buy those, I think, in a sleeve of three for $20.
Sure.
So the golfers are going, holy smoke. And I don't know if that's the exact price, but something like that.
Yeah.
And he, of course, is giving them a great deal.
Right.
And so he's out there, and he'll come back, you know, a couple hours later and with $80 in his hand. You know, here's a young teenager. Now, he started doing this when he was 13.
Mm.
He's 50 now, 16 this year, but 13 years old, he's out there doing this. He just finds creative ways. You know, there's always a way. I think there's always a way to attract or draw to you or bring more abundance in. And I think what happens is we become so habitual in our thinking that we don't think beyond,
right,
you know, the traditional ways or the normal ways. And so when people get all caught up in scarcity issues, and they start, like, you know, joking or getting, you know, holding on or hoarding more, it does create some tension in the whole industry, in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Because if people aren't spending, then it's not circulating and value's not being exchanged for value, and et cetera, et cetera. Because if you think about it, Lori, there's not a big hole that opens up in the middle of the universe and all the money got sucked into it somewhere. You know, it's going to show up in 2011. That's not the case. It's still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just someone's holding it or hoarding it or whatever. They're afraid to spend it. And fear debilitates us.
Mm-hmm.
Debilitates us. You know, it causes us to stop doing things, or it shuts down all the good. And so I think we need to be more cautious, more, you know, creatively aware of, you know, finances, obviously, a little more creative, maybe on investment strategies, maybe invest a little bit more time to understand our own financial situation, do some more planning. But we've got that great gift, because that's one of the things that we've been given, is the ability to choose, and we've been given the gift of the ability to feel.
Right.
And nobody can ever take that away from us, unless we are locked away in a physical prison. Then it's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have the ability to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And choose, actually.
And, you know, and create liberty. It's just a matter of perception. So
that's it.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true.
And I think, you know, one of the things I really liked about your book, and we're going to get into that a lot more, but I do have one more question about your journey, but I think, you know, the big part that you mentioned about, you know, we get so caught up on the how,
yeah,
we want to plan or figure out, well, this is the only way I can do it. I work, or I'm self-employed, so the only way I can do it is through this.
Yeah.
And so we limit how things can come to us by just our own limitations on how we believe or how we think money works.
Oh, you're absolutely right. That is the one message that I would like to find the tallest mountain in the world, climb on top and scream it out. You don't have to know how.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that, you know, as a common sense thinker, anyone with a thinking mind, we tend to attempt to find the how as soon as we initiate an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So you get an idea, I'd like to do this thing, and then the next logical step is to figure out, well, how am I going to do that? If we don't get an answer right away, we will do one of two things. We'll either dismiss it, or we'll maybe try and find an answer to it if we're passionate about it. And so what I'm suggesting is you don't have to know how you're going to achieve what you want. Just hold on tight. It's like that whole concept of be a dog with a bone. You know, hold on tight to the idea and don't let go. Not that you're going to growl or bite anyone. You know, that's not it either. It's just really of increasing the intensity of faith, you know, that emotion called faith, and let the how show up. Because what will happen is you'll get the idea to do something or to have something, and then next thing you know, an email lands in your inbox or a phone call. I'll give you an example of that.
Mm.
When I had submitted the manuscript for my book, Your Destiny Switch, to Hay House,
mm-hmm,
and so that's the book before 21 Distinctions of Wealth, I handed in the manuscript, and then I received an email from the editor at Hay House saying, okay, Peggy, who's going to write the foreword for your book? And I knew that question was coming. You know, I knew it was coming, and I had sort of given some thought to it, but not extensive thought, and I thought, well, when the question comes, I'll get an answer. And so the question comes in, and it's like, so Peggy, who's going to write the foreword for this book? And I thought to myself, okay, who would I like to have ideally, like the number one person? And then I quickly got the answer, and it was an intuitive answer, which you can totally understand. And so my intuitive answer was God.
Hmm.
I would like God to write the foreword for my book. And I thought, okay, well, Who's communicating with God? Well, Neil Donald Walsh is. Right? He wrote a whole series of books, Conversations mm-hmm. with God. And so he's got a dialogue going on. Are you familiar with his work?
Very much, yes.
Yeah. And so I thought, I'd like Neil Donald Walsh to write the foreword for my book. Now, I've been to Neil's events before. He didn't know who I was. You know, I had very, very aware of who he was. Mm-hmm. He was not aware of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so what had happened was an interesting timing, because the same day I'm thinking, okay, I'd like Neil Donald Walsh to write the foreword for my book. Now, I didn't go to this place of, well, how the heck am I ever going to get Neil Donald Walsh, and dismiss it, and away it went. I just said, okay, Neil Donald Walsh, that's it. That's who's going to write the foreword for my book. And I swear to you, within 2 hours, I received an email from Neil's personal email account, from Neil to Peggy. And it said, "Dear Peggy, how does one get the great Peggy McCall to help them with the launch of their book?" He said, "I have a book called Home with God. It's the final in my CWG, the Conversations with God book series. It's being released in March, and I would like you to help with the launch of that book." And so, I mean, I'm sitting there with my mouth hanging open. You know, I know how this stuff works, right?
Yeah.
I teach it, I preach it, I write about it, you know, I create programs. But even when it happens, I still sit there going, in amazement, going, wow, you know, it's incredible how fast it can happen. And so I sent Neil an email, and I said, you know, how I'm a huge fan, and his books have positively influenced my life. I would love to help with the launch of Home with God, which is, by the way, a fabulous book. What I'd like him to do is write the foreword for my book, Your Destiny Switch. And, of course, respecting the fact that I know he'd have to like it first, because he's a man of integrity. And if he did, then I'd like him to do the foreword. And he responded, he said, "I'd be delighted to review your manuscript, and if I like it, write the foreword for you." And so he did. He wrote the foreword for my book. And in the foreword, he wrote, "This may be the most important book you ever read." And I'm so grateful for Peggy McCall for having written it. And I was just blown away to receive that. Now, having, you know, I know that now. I mean, that was the reality. But just thinking it back to the point where I decided I wanted Neil Donald Walsh to write the foreword, I didn't know how it would happen. And I thought, I don't need to know how it's going to happen. I just have to see it, believe it, feel it. Act as if it's already done, and it'll be done. And then 2 hours later, I'm getting an email landing in my inbox.
That's amazing.
And, of course, it, you know, became a reality. And so that's just how magical and how fabulous it can all work for us.
It's so true. Mm-hmm. So true. So the last question I had about your journey was, you mentioned in your book, and I think it's brilliant because I always see the opposite. And so I was just so, I don't always see, but I always hear the opposite. So many people, when they travel, because they are always traveling on these spiritual journeys, and they always say how, you know, oh, there's such great poverty, or there's such a distinction in wealth in this country where there's great wealth and there's great poverty, and they always focus on the poverty. And you said in your book that, you know, traveling exposed you to wealth.
Yes.
And so, you know, it truly is what you focus on, you create.
Oh, my goodness, that's so true. And, you know, when I think about just yesterday, I was talking to someone about my recent trip to South Africa. And they said, you know, what was it like there? You know, they're sort of trying to, you know, they were asking questions like, what did you eat? Food, you know, same as what we eat here. And they said, well, what was it like there? And I said, it was wonderful. And they said, well, weren't you scared? Because there's lots of crime, and you know, they've got lots of challenges in Johannesburg more than the other two cities. I was in Cape Town and Durban as well. And I said, yeah, it's there, but you know what? I think when you go somewhere with whatever you're feeling inside, it'll tend to reflect back, you know, from what you see in the exterior world. And so I didn't necessarily see the crime. I didn't see any crime, actually. I could see that there was poverty, but that's not what I saw. So when I would be taken on a tour, and I actually wasn't there for sightseeing, I was there to serve. So I delivered many speaking engagements. I did bookstore signings. I did radio, TV. And so my purpose, I didn't go there on a vacation. I went there to serve. But of course, my work is wonderful. I love it. And I just feel like I'm on vacation all the time anyway. So, I would be going to different events, whether I was going to, you know, the next speaking engagement, to the airport or whatever, and we go by these things called squatters camps.
Hmm.
And in Johannesburg, or pardon me, in South Africa, I believe the population is 40 million.
Hmm.
And if my memory serves me correct, I believe 40% of the 40 million are unemployed,
wow.
which is an enormous number of people that are unemployed. And so we drive by these things called squatters camps. And I would look, you know, sort of look in and see the squatters camps, and people are living in what they've created, you know, homes or dwellings from pieces of wood they found at the side of the road, or they've sort of made made structures that they can live in. And the ladies that would be driving me around would say, you know, you go in there and you take a look and you'll find they're all spotless. They're so clean. What amazed me when I drove by there is the pride that people would take in their homes where they were living, and the way that people came together, you know, to support each other. And so I didn't look at it and go, oh, poor people, you know, or anything like that. I looked at it and saw the love. I saw the expression of, you could be living in this. I see children playing and laughing, just like you see children playing and laughing in a, you know, a regular daycare center, you know, in Toronto as an example. And so it just amazed me what I saw and what I witnessed. And another thing that happened while I was in South Africa is there's an organization there called NOAA. And it was started by a gentleman who's a plastic surgeon. And what happened was a lot of people, there was an AIDS, there still is AIDS, you know, challenge, lots of people dying of AIDS. And at the time when this, what we call an epidemic started, lots of parents were dying of AIDS and their children were still around. And of course, these children didn't have anyone to take care of them. And then what happened was they had nowhere to go. And some of these children were just sort of in the streets, and some were being picked up from, you know, whoever, and taken in wherever they could. And it was a big, big challenge. So this plastic surgeon started this organization called NOAA, where children can go and they're fed, they're clothed, they're educated. And it was amazing. And Hay House, my publisher, donates all of their profits to NOAA. And so when I was there, the director from Hay House had said to me, she said, do you want to go see NOAA while you're here? And I said, I'd love to go see NOAA, because I remember seeing a presentation on NOAA when we were at an event for Hay House the previous October, and it was Louise Hay's 80th birthday party. And and so the South Africa team had put this presentation on, and NOAA was a part of it, and it was just amazing to see all the great work that they're doing over there. And so someone had said to me, oh, you're going to NOAA? Well, be ready with the tissues. And I'm thinking, you know, I think it's all the way we look at it. And you know, they were meaning you're going to be sad, and it's going to make, but you know what? It made me so happy to go there and to see how these children were cared for, and how they were loved, and how they were fed and educated and clothed. And they were all so attentive. You know, I got there, and they had this beautiful yard with all these play structures and toys in it, and it was well organized and neat. And then I went inside, and they had shelves and shelves of books. And then in the kitchen, they were preparing this wonderful, healthy meal, and you could see the menu written in chalk on the wall. It was all healthy stuff. I'm thinking, these guys are eating better than, you know, I do. And it's like, great food, and you could see fresh vegetables, fresh fruits, and all volunteers doing the work in NOAA. Then you go into one of the classrooms and you'd see the little children there, and they'd be, you know, circle around the teacher, and the teacher would be reading to them or teaching them something, and they're all eyes on the teacher, you know, so attentive. And I'd walk in and they'd all be doing this thing where it's like a high five, you know, go around the room and all eyes, like they eye connect with you, they connect with you. It was such a growing and wonderful experience. And I think that we can go anywhere and we can have it. I love to go to Mexico. It's one of my favorite places. And just to, you know, drive through Mexico, I remember the first time I went there, I was really young at the time, and I saw people living in shacks, you know, at the side of the road type of thing. I thought, you know, sort of surprising, because I never really witnessed that before. But, you know, you go down there or anywhere, you know, third world country or whatever, and you'll find people are happy. You know, they don't need a you know, humongous dwelling to make them happy. They can be happy living in anything. And you know, it's all a matter of choice. It's all what we choose to look at. And so I find that there's an abundance, and it's not even necessarily money only. There's an abundance of stuff everywhere. And so the great thing is that the world that we live in, you know, we can just spread it around a little bit more. We'd all be living in abundance. But you know, it's not the reality, and so you know, I think there's a great opportunity for those of us that have an abundance of something, and we all have an abundance of something, that we can share that with others and help create more abundance in the world.
Mm-hmm. So when we get to your book, which is 21 Distinctions of Wealth, mm-hmm. we've been talking about it, and there's so much we could probably, you know, do 3 or 4 shows on it, but
I'm open to that.
Okay, perfect. Let's do it.
We ask and the universe responds. Isn't that one of the distinctions?
I think so. So, I mean, I'm really big on the awareness part, because I think that's, you know, that's how we are becoming. That's how we are, you know, getting out of the ego and getting out of the past and really, you know, being in the now and learning how to just become more aware. And I think awareness of, you know, all the things in our life that we, our perceptions and our beliefs around money or wealth or abundance that seems to, you know, hold us back.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Me too. I'm big on the awareness thing.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we have to understand our relationship to money, to abundance, to wealth, and not get so caught up in the thoughts and the emotions or our reactions to our thoughts, which become, you know, an emotion that we're attached to. And yeah. I think the more aware we are, the more we can actually feel when these things are coming in. Because a lot of times we just react unconsciously and we're not aware.
Oh, so true.
And I guess, you know, your book brings a lot of these thoughts about positive as well as negative, how this is impacting our world. And you want to talk a little bit about how awareness is one of the keys to being able to do this and our relationship to money and abundance and
Yes. I think it is the key. I think that's where it all really begins, is having that awareness. And I think that our awareness quite often changes, because today, even when I think about who I am today, of course, I'm still the same person, but as far as what I'm expressing and what I'm feeling, feels very different from who I was or what I was expressing and feeling 30 years ago. And how has that changed? Well, it's changed with awareness.
Mm-hmm.
It's changed with making a choice to become aware. And then it's made a choice of constantly expanding and growing, because I think that we are always expanding and growing. And then, of course, just noticing what you're feeling. My book, Your Destiny Switch, is all about our emotions, right? The nature and the power of our emotions and how they are playing a role in what's showing up in our life. And as it relates to abundance, I think we need to become aware of how we feel toward abundance. And I'll give an example of this. Mm-hmm. It's a great example. There's a woman that one time had said to me, she said, you know, I just keep experiencing lack and poverty and debt and more debt and more debt. And I said, okay, well, let's look at some awareness techniques. I said, what are you experiencing every day? What are you thinking of when you wake up in the morning? Well, I'm thinking about the load of money that I got to pay out and how I don't have it in my bank account. I said, well, how's that make you feel? It makes me feel scared. And I said, so then what do? Well, I drag my lazy butt out of bed, right? You know, you're sort of visualizing this happening, right? Just sort of roll over like, oh, I gotta get up. And so, I mean, you're already creating. What are you doing? You're creating more of the same. We're creative beings. What we're thinking, feeling, acting, doing, we are just recreating or creating more of the same. And so I said that, you know, so then what happens? She goes, well, you know, I'll go to the mail and I'll check my mailbox, and sure enough, there's my Visa bill. It's like, oh, I can't believe I spent that much last month, and how am I ever going to, you know, dig out of the hole that I'm already in? And then the hydro bill's in, and I get an unexpected tax bill, or, you know, something else happens, and my vacuum cleaner breaks. It's like, oh, it's one thing after another. And it's like, okay, so what is she doing, right? All energy toward debt. And now I'm not saying you ignore it, that you don't go to your mailbox anymore. I'm not saying that at all. But you can go to your mailbox and have a different experience and you know, grab the same envelopes. So you go to your mailbox and you can open your mailbox with excitement. I mean, you're absolutely, you know, at choice whether you're going to do that or not do that. So go to the mailbox, open it up, and say, okay, well, now I have an opportunity. I have an opportunity to take care of these things. Also, I think we need to bless things and be appreciative for things. So if Visa, as an example, has given you a credit limit that you have used, be grateful that they've done that for you because they've given you a vehicle, right, to use their money until you get to a point where you're going to pay it back to them. And, of course, they're going to make some money on the interest rate that they're going to be charging you if you're not paying the whole thing off. So that's the business they're in, right? So just be grateful that they're there and that they must have had enough faith in you to believe that you're going to pay that money back. And even if you didn't, they'd probably be well covered because there's lots of people that are paying their high interest rates and, you know, covering off expenses. And now, I'm not saying you neglect it, but what I'm saying is it gives you the opportunity to be responsible. So go to the mailbox, get excited about the opportunity to take care of it. If you're finding that it's overwhelming, what I suggest is do something. I call it a wealth creation plan. It could also be called a debt elimination plan, of where you just take a look at everything that you owe, look at what you currently have coming in, and take responsibility for it, where you can actually get on the phone with some of your, you know, the creditors and say to them, you know, look, this is what my budget is. This is what I can afford. Can we make an arrangement? And lots of them will make arrangements with you. But I think it's, you know, a matter of don't try and push it under the rug, because that's not going to make it go away. It's taking the responsibility for it, but then getting excited and feeling good and positive and faith, have the faith that you are going to clean it up and just start to take action toward it. And when you get a little extra money, you know, like look at my little teenage son, you know, getting skateboard parts and selling them for a profit. I mean, just one little idea. See, that's the thing with this universe is there's economic opportunities everywhere. There's people that are making fortunes in these challenging times because they're coming up with creative ideas. And so you can come up with a creative idea just like the next guy. So, you know, just become aware of how you're feeling and as that relates to your own financial situation. And another one is just notice what you're saying all the time. There was a lady that I know that recently has been talking a lot about the debt load that she has and the fact that she had to borrow some money from her son in order to buy groceries. And so, you know, here's an example of her just continually talking about it, and all she's doing is focusing on debt, more debt, more debt. That's all I have is debt, and I got to get the money from my son in order to get some groceries, et cetera, et cetera. And then so what is she doing? Well, she's just, you know, creating more and more debt. And because that's where all of her energy is going. And so we've really got to be aware of that. We've got to be, you know, very acutely aware of what we're feeling, thinking, and saying. You know, what's the language of debt, of money? How is it that you're communicating, you know, your situation? What I suggest for those that, you know, are used to talking about it all the time or used to, you know, expressing all the debt that they have is that they just bite their tongue. Just bite your tongue. And again, it's not a matter of ignoring it. Just bite your tongue. And then start to speak of things that are abundant in the universe. Start to notice the things that are abundant in the universe. Start to speak in a very positive way and create the language around that. And so when you do that, you will, you know, begin to create new results. But it takes time. You know, one thing that I find with lots of people is that they want it, and they want it now. And so if it's not happening now, then they get angry, or they get frustrated, or they get disillusioned. And if you think of any of those emotions, anger, frustration, disillusionment, what are they? They're emotions that are on the lower end of the scale of human emotions, and they are going to attract more of the same into their life. So, or they're going to repel the good from their life. So anytime we're feeling an emotion that doesn't feel good, to put it into very simplistic terms, like fearful or disillusioned or sad or lonely or guilty, that is always going to be pushing away good from us, or we're depreciating. But if we're appreciating our life, if we're noticing what's abundant in the world, and we're feeling excited about opportunities, and we're feeling confident that we're going to take care of our, you know, financial load or whatever, then that's going to change the experience that we have.
And I think you talk about it a lot in the book about being grateful and having appreciation. And so if they can change the energy around the bills and the debt into, well, what are the benefits that that this has given me.
True.
You know, with a credit card, you know, the benefits like you mentioned, well, they're giving you credit. They're giving you, they're lending you money.
Yes.
So if you can see, if you can shift that energy towards, you know, to appreciating and feeling grateful for what they're being given, instead of just focusing on the amount and what that means to their personal debt, you know,
yes,
it does a lot to shift the energy. And it takes such little things to, you know, bring a complete shift in how they're thinking about it and feeling about it.
That's so true. You're absolutely right.
Hmm. I really like the story that you talked about, the Golden Buddha. Relate that in how, you know, how your book kind of uncovers that for them. Because, I mean, as you speak, you know, it is an energy. It is not, you know, we keep thinking it's this tangible thing that's physically in our hands. And, you know, we keep forgetting that everything is energy.
Oh, so true. Well, the story that's shared in 21 Distinctions of Wealth is actually in distinction number one. And the distinction is that you were born rich, or you are already rich. You were born that way. And the story dates back to the 1930s when there was this 10-foot-tall clay statue of the Buddha. And it had been found in a monastery. It was a deserted monastery, and they decided to, it was moved to the storage facility. And so 20 years later, the monks at a monastery in Bangkok, Thailand, expressed a desire to own this statue of the great Buddha, so they made arrangements and they had it moved. But as it was being moved, it slipped off the crane and it fell and it cracked open. And at first everyone felt, oh my goodness, this is terrible. This beautiful Buddha has been ruined. But then as the movers took a look closer, it wasn't cracked wide open, it was sort of cracked.
Mm-hmm.
And they noticed that through the crack, there was a shimmer of gold. And so they looked a little bit further, you know, beyond that clay exterior, and inside there was a solid gold statue. And it had been covered in this clay or the mud, literally, for years. And I guess they were maybe preventing robbers from stealing it or whatever. But they didn't realize that the value was always there, that there was a hidden treasure inside. And, of course, being solid gold, it was worth a fortune.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what happens with us, is that inside of us, there's a solid gold Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've got so much value inside of us that we're literally covered with mud, and that mud are just the belief systems, right? Those, you know, old negative, hurtful, harmful beliefs that we're not worthy, we're not good enough, you know, we don't have the education, we can't do it, or, you know, whatever it happens to be. And that if we just realize that the gold is there and that opportunity is within, and that if we just, you know, recognize that it's there, we can polish it off and bring it out, and then the world will see it as well.
Hmm. And then talk about, that you know, everything is energy, because it really is, and that we keep focusing on this physical reality as more real than what is around us and the words and the qualities of what abundance means. And, you know, whether it's wealth or whether it's something else you're wanting to bring into your life, I mean, it's an energy. It's not, you know, this, we just want to, I think it's almost like we need to control it, because we think that everything can be controlled in this world.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And, you see, what's important for us to understand about money and abundance and riches is that it is a form of energy, and it can change form. You know, we're constantly changing form, and I think we don't even realize that abundance is an energy, and that we're connected to it. You know, we are the energy, we're a part of it, and that there's no separation from us than the good that's in this world, or the abundance that's in this world, and that we can, you know, once we realize that there's this unlimited potential that's available out there for us to create wealth, for us to experience wealth. We don't even have to have the physical aspect of wealth, you know, the way we might think of having a thing in our hands to have the experience of having it. For example, if someone says to you, you know, I really have a desire to have a luxurious car. Well, why do you want the luxurious car? Because I want to drive it. And, well, why do you want to drive it? Well, it feels good. Well, what's it feel like when you're going down the road? Well, it feels like you're driving in your living room, right? Like you're driving in some, you know, wonderful, relaxing vehicle. It's just, it's exciting. I said, well, can you imagine what that feel like right now? Yeah. You know, and you can watch them. You can have a dialogue with someone, and they're explaining to you something that they desire to have. And you'll see them physically having that experience. What is that? That's energy, right? It's an energetic experience. And so do you need the car to have that experience? No. You can have it without the car. And yet, you know, we want the car, or we want the home. We want the dollars in our bank account. Can you have the feeling of having dollars in your bank account without having the dollars in your bank account? Yes, you absolutely can. And if you woke up every morning and just felt like, oh, God, it's great that I have all that money in my bank account. You could even print statements. You can go online, print your bank statement, and add a whole bunch of numbers in front of what's already there. You know, visualize that, imagine that, mail it to yourself if you want, open it up and go, woo, you know, look at that, you know, look at the statement. Sooner or later, you are going to change what's actually in your bank account because you've already had the experience and you're drawing to you. And you know what? Even if you didn't change what was in your bank account, isn't it wonderful that you had that experience anyway?
Mm-hmm. Isn't it? Without the expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, why don't we talk about the fact that you have 21 distinctions of wealth?
Yeah.
And they're affirmations, and, you know, you've created it this way because of why?
Great question. And I'm so glad you asked that one. Well, 21 is because I had started, you know, I just started to make a list of what I felt were the distinctions of wealth. Excuse me. I stopped when I got to 21. Now, the way that the book is designed, I felt that that's it. You know, I don't think there's 22 or 23. Maybe there is, but you could probably, you know, even after the book was created and I was discussing having this conversation with my agent, she said, well, what about this one? Well, that's really part of 7. Well, what about this one? I mean, they weren't coming off that easy or whatever. Well, that's 13. And so, you know, you can probably come up with some others, but they're probably already in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came up with 21, and I just felt that's it. There's no more. And it wasn't that I was looking for 21. I wasn't seeking to have 21. It just happened that there are and were 21. Now, what's interesting is that I was influenced many years ago by a great book by Og Mandino called The Greatest Salesman in the World. And The Greatest Salesman in the World included 10 Scrolls for Success. Mm-hmm. And what Og Mandino recommended is that you read one scroll 3 times a day for 5 weeks. And then at the end of that scroll, then you go on to the next one and you read that one for three times a day for 5 weeks. And the scrolls were approximately 2.5 pages. They were quite lengthy. And so it would take, I don't know, maybe 40 minutes to, you know, review the scrolls each day. And then you record it. But it was interesting because I really felt, you know, positive change from doing this particular exercise. I thought it was a wonderful way of really affirming and reaffirming these great ideas because each scroll had one particular message. For example, one scroll was, I will persist until I succeed. Mm-hmm. And then we'll go on and explain a little bit further. But really, the whole scroll was, I will persist until I succeed. So I thought, I want to make a book that's more influential, meaning that it's going to help people get the understandings of these distinctions, but then apply it into their life, because that's where the magic starts, right, mm-hmm. is with the application. So I'll give you the knowledge, the understanding, and then the application, which is that 3-step process I talked about earlier mm-hmm. in our interview. And so I designed it in a way that the distinction is there. You know, for example, you are already rich, you're born that way. Then the chapter explains what that means. And then at the end of the chapter, there's affirmations that you can read. And you read them for 21 days, 3 times a day. And you do the first one for 21 days, 3 times a day. And then you go to the next one, and you read that one for 21 days, 3 times a day. And then you go to the next one. Personally, I'm on day 6 of distinction number 12, because when I submitted the manuscript last September, I started them.
Mm-hmm.
And I got an email this morning from a woman who just invested in the book and said, she's starting today. It's going to be her day 1, May 1st, right? Mm-hmm. She's starting today. And so she'll go through, and she said, and I'll give you a great testimonial next year after that your book has positively influenced me. And I like the way that girl thinks. So, so if you look at what they are, I mean, they're short. Like the first one is, you know, a matter of a couple paragraphs. You can read it in seconds. So I'm not talking about adding a huge amount of, you know, effort to your day. Mm-hmm. It's simple effort. It doesn't take that long. Probably takes less than a minute to read them even three times a day, but it will positively affect your life. It's going to positively impact your life because you'll really start to get it. Now, what I recommend is that when you read the scrolls, you do it with emotion. Mm-hmm. You sort of tie that emotional energy to it so that you're going to have a more powerful response or more powerful result as well. So that's the way the book's designed. It's really a system of being and feeling more abundant and wealthy and rich. And so that's the way it's designed, with the distinction and explanation of what it is, and then the affirmation for each distinction, and then carried out over a period of 21 days per distinction.
Right. And obviously, you know, so that we're not creating the dogma here, which is what, you know, happens in a lot of cases, you know, and that's why you bring in the emotion, which is absolutely
critical.
Mandatory.
Yeah. It is. You're right.
Because if it's just something you're saying three times a day, if you don't have, you know, the excitement or the passion or the, you know, that enthusiasm for what it is that you're saying, it's going to be pretty much meaningless.
I'm with you. Absolutely with you on that.
Yeah. But I think it's a great book that really can touch and change people's lives. It's a matter of, you know, really understanding and getting back to this awareness bit of your own inner emotions, reactions, beliefs that limit you. And if you can't, you know, that's where you have to start. It always has to start within. But I mean, that's where people really need to, you know, they need to read the book and experience their own reactions to what they're reading.
Yeah, absolutely. It's application. It's really what it is. And you know, as you're saying that, Lori, I'm nodding my head, but it's not out of, you know, good for me. It's not it at all. I don't write this stuff to, you know, sit in a warehouse somewhere. I write it because I know it works. I personally experienced it. I've witnessed other people experience, and I want to, you know, help another create positive change. And so that's why it's there. I mean, that's really why they're created. That's why this book was designed the way it is. I think it's unique. I don't know of any other book on the planet that's like it. I mean, it's the way it's designed and laid out, and it's a life-changing book.
Mm-hmm. So is there any big point that you would like to make that we haven't touched on, because we're almost to the end of the interview, that you know, is really... Because we mentioned a lot of key areas, but is there anything that we're missing that you'd like to bring up?
Yeah, but if anybody's listening to this and thinking, well, maybe it's not for me, I think you need to think again, because it is. You know, lots of people just dismiss stuff because they think hogwash, you know, or whatever, you know, old programming has come up, but just give it a chance, you know, give it a try. And, you know, when you look at what the investment is for a small book like this, I know on Chapters it's like $12 and something. They're discounting it 34%. I know Amazon's discounting it. It's $10.85, you know, U.S. And this is not a big investment, right? We're talking a small investment for a big return. Just give it a chance. You know, realize that it is designed for everyone, regardless of what your situation is. You know, I was raised in a home where the four children, and we had a small, tiny two-bedroom home. Four of us slept in the same room. I slept in a room with my sister in a bed, and my brother and my other brother were in the same room. I certainly wasn't raised in abundance. It's not where it's coming from. You know, we struggled too. You know, and there were even times in my adult life where I didn't know how I was going to, you know, get groceries either. You know, I've gone through the hard times too. And so, you know, it's just really to give it a chance, give it a try. You know, you may have tried some other things, but this book, 21 Distinctions of Wealth, has been designed in a way that I know will create positive change. So, you know, just really believe that it may be the one book that's going to work for you.
I think I would agree with that. And, you know, I think it's been quite an honor, you know, talking with you and hearing and feeling, you know, the soul that is part of Peggy that is coming out with, you know, who you are and why you're doing this. And, you know, it's not just about the wealth. It's about what you can do with that wealth. And I feel that that's really part of the change you're helping to assist. And you're creating these wonderful networks. And you're not just doing this for yourself. You're actually trying to create a better place for people to embrace this planet.
So I think it's a great blessing and a great honor that I was able to interview to you today. And I would love to have you back and do some more, similar talk. But why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you, how they can get the book, and I guess it's everywhere, but, yes. They can find you more information about you on your website.
Correct, yes. www.destinies.com. It's D-E-S as in Sam, T-I-N-I-E-S as in Sam.com, destinies.com. And how to contact me is actually on my website. The book is available effective today everywhere. And so it's going to be available through all of the bookstores and the online bookstores as well.
Great.
And thank you very much for the work that you do, Lori. It's very powerful. It's very beneficial, and I'm absolutely honored to be, part of your show, and I appreciate you very much.
Thank you. All right. Well, with that, I will see you next week, but get the book. I think it's a great book, and I think, whether it helps you with wealth or whether it helps you in other areas, I think the premise is all the same, and I think this is a book that can definitely assist in what you're wanting to create. So take care, and we'll see you next week.